Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, St. Louis, DGS and Cable X. I did it again. I just drank and swallowed down my Twinkie pipe.
Uh-oh.
Dang it.
What pipe?
I did it at lunch today.
Yeah, you did. We always called it, growing up, when you would swallow, like, especially just taking a drink and it goes the wrong way, like it did for me.
Yeah.
We called it going down the Twinkie pipe.
Oh.
No idea.
That's just a thing, interesting. Yeah. We always called it the wrong pipe. Like, oh, I went down the wrong pipe.
Yep.
And I say it at 60 years old as if it's a medical term. Like everyone, you know.
Oh, Twinkie pipe, of course. Yeah, right next to the...
Careful.
Yeah, nothing good can happen.
Right next to the right pipe, the one that's supposed to go down.
It is a design flaw, right? That you breathe and eat with the same tube.
I think it adds an element of danger and surprise.
Like, they're too close to each other.
Yeah.
There should be, like, a separation.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Between the two. That choking wasn't a thing.
Yeah. Be great.
Be nice if your eyeballs weren't made of jelly.
Ew.
Yeah, that too.
I don't know. I've not had a problem with that.
Of course not.
Everything's still, all of us, we're all still in place, right? They'll still work.
I don't know. Sometimes when you go to get your contact out and it's like stuck to your eye, you just like dig in there. I can tell I'm doing some damage.
All right. I'll tell you what I cannot do is I can't do contacts. I can't put anything in my eye. And whenever they do the eye exam and they have to numb your eyeball to put the thing on it to test the thickness of your eye, that is a,
really?
That's a problem for me.
Hmm.
I have too much of a
do
reflex.
You tell them, like, hey, this is going to be bad?
Yeah. I did do a LASIK consultation once years ago, and they were having a tough time getting close to my eyeball. And she said, well, you would be a candidate for this. It would work for you. But if you do it, you're going to need to take some Valium or something when you come in because you are too fidgety.
So what's it been? Gosh, 10 years, probably something like that. I forget. But I had a prostate infection, which was the sickest I've ever been in my life. It was absolutely just, you know, like, it was terrible. And I knew I was really sick, and my buddy set me up with a urologist, and I went in, and I knew he was going to have to do a rectal exam. I'd never had one. I was probably 50, maybe 55, I'm sick as a dog. And it's summertime, and I'm dressed like I'm late for third grade. I'm wearing like an oversized T-shirt and shorts and sandals. And he comes walking in, and unbeknownst to me, he's a huge DGS fan. I don't know. Oh. I don't care. I just make me well. And he walked in, and I'm standing next to the exam table, and first thing I say is, you're probably going to need to put your finger in my bottom, aren't you? These are the exact words I used. Yes. Yes. Dressed like I live in a home somewhere, and he laughs. He's like, "I probably should." I'm like, "Can we just do that now, then?
Get it out the way.
Get it out of the way." Yeah.
That's not a fun. I've had it done before, and I went in for a physical, like, I don't know how many months ago, whatever it was. And you know, I'm at that age, and I was like, "Oh, it's got to be time now.
It's gonna happen."
And I said, he signed me up for the blood test, and I go, do you have to do the thing with the finger? And he's like, no, we use blood tests now. He goes, I can do it if you want. I don't desire it, but I just thought you had to.
He walks out, he's like, room 4 is a free.
This guy. Yeah, like, I didn't know they use blood tests now.
Anything bother you guys, especially medically or physically like that? You got to...
like that we've had done, or just like I would always
like,
said
here, here's one. Okay. I can barely even speak right now. The thought of banging my wrist together makes me want to die.
Really?
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Is that a medical thing?
Will it mess you up if we do it?
Yes. Okay. Don't do it.
Oh, right.
Do it.
I won't. No, that's why I asked.
You'll have to finish the show
I
for
wanted
me.
To, I wanted to see, like, why?
It's the boinginess of it.
Oh. The only thing that makes me feel like kind of like, the best way I can describe it is like car sick, or I kind of recoil. Like, don't, like, touching your belly button or pressing on your belly button makes me feel just like.
Have you ever had a bad one? Ugh. Has anyone ever done that?
Well,
to be
no, that's
cute?
The thing. Like, no one's really pressed on my belly button, but I mean, like,
now they
if
know.
Now they know. But, like, if I were to do it, or if someone was like, you know, I don't know. It would. No, and I've
put
never had
ground.
A bad one. I think I might throw up.
Yeah. I know a lot of people like that.
The idea of it makes me feel gross.
Ugh. One thing I don't like is anything that's something like injuries that I see from someone else that I've had. Like if somebody breaks their leg on a football game, I hate that because broke my leg. I just flash back to what that felt like. So I do hate that.
I don't like the belly button either because you feel it in other parts. It's not good.
Oh, dude. I don't know. I just feel nauseated.
Yeah.
I can do it all day.
Oh, really? Are you serious?
Yeah. I have a great belly button.
None of that kind of stuff.
I can be a belly button model.
Yeah.
I can't. I mean, I know nobody likes throwing up. I can't do it. I can't see videos. I have to close my eyes in movies. Like The Sandlot traumatized me for 10 years, and I still can't think about it because I'll get sick.
When did they throw up in The Sandlot?
When they all ate the tobacco and then went on the...
I love that movie.
The carnival ride.
One of the best sports movies of all time.
It's a great movie, except for that part. I mean, I would be traumatized. I wouldn't sleep tonight.
Yeah.
I would be so nervous.
I remember in the Stephen King movie, I forget which one it was, but in the beginning where the guy, they're having the pie eating contest.
Ooh.
Remember that?
Oh, it's Stand By Me, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That one got me.
Oh, ooh. The kids. Yeah,
the kids.
None of that does anything.
Is it Stand By Me? Yeah, it's Stand By Me. Yeah.
By the way, can we just get something straight with the audience today? Today's not a real show. Just lower your expectations.
Because of the snow?
It's Friday. It's our second snowstorm in a week. Everything's still crappy out there. Like, we're just going to hang.
Okay. You know? We're redoing Christmas. We're starting over.
Yeah.
Let's do the holidays again.
Yeah. Anyone else? So, Matt Pauly's description of having pneumonia... and watching the rest of my family have the flu, and I'm still fairly unscathed. Anyone else like that? I'm kind of just like, I feel like I'm in a minefield.
I feel like I've dodged a lot of bullets. I feel like everyone I've met or been around or seen is like, we were just sick, or we are sick, or they got sick the next day, and knock on wood, I've dodged all the bullets. This is the healthiest I've ever been, and I think it's because I broke my leg, and I'm not running, so I'm sleeping. Yeah. I really think that's what it is. Because definitely when you're training hard, you are so worn down that your immune system's down. It's good to exercise, but to be worn down to that level. So I don't know. I am crediting sleep, not waking up at 4:30 or 5.
Other than missing running, are you feeling better physically without it?
It's weird. I'm not so tired I could cry every day. That's new. And I think my face is filled in. My dad's like, you look good. You look healthy. It looks like you look rested. You don't look so worn out. And so there's that, but I miss it so much. I feel really sad. So yesterday was the first day that I was allowed to try the stationary bike,
which is
the first thing I've done in a month. It went well. I mean, it's not the same because part of running is being outside, being with your friends. It's beautiful. They're all running in the snow and having fun, and I'm sad by myself on a bike. But I was grateful that I could do something because doing zero cardio, like I couldn't even go on a walk even though I did in the snow. Doing zero cardio was not good.
What'd you point to Kevin?
Because I've been telling her to stop doing all the things she's not supposed to do. She's out shoveling snow on ice and snow on a bad foot that you can barely walk, and you're like, no, I can do this. Like, no, you should not. You should not be doing that. That's how injuries last.
That is so true. Man, it is not getting better.
That's exactly right. As a person that's had a lot of injuries, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
And of course, I say that I'm teasing you because I was the same way. Like, I played through things, I didn't stop, and they just lasted forever.
We grew up in that era.
I know.
Walk it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I did it in college a couple of times, even though I never played. I'm just sitting on the bench, but I didn't want to miss anything because I didn't want anybody to think that I couldn't do these things. And then I played for, I worked for like 4 or 5 weeks with a bad wrist, until I just couldn't anymore. Like, my hand just wouldn't move.
Oh.
It just, that's it. This is what it looked like. It just would not move. So I had to get that taken care of.
I'm thinking of, you know, Jake Peavy won a Cy Young. So he had, he was feeling some sort of soreness in his lat.
Yeah.
Like, in his arm, was really fatigued, but he felt like, I can't let these guys down. I got to keep pitching, And one day, he threw a pitch, and the lat muscle just ripped off.
Tears right off.
Yep.
Damn. So he said, I learned my lesson that you can try, you know, you can pretend to be a big boy and pitch through anything, but you're not being tough. You're being stupid.
No, it's going to break.
And you're going to end up screwing your team by not being smart.
So instead of missing 2 or 3 weeks or even a month, you're out for a year.
Yeah.
He's out for the rest
of the year. My worst medical visit was 2002. Rach knows the story, but I don't think I told you guys. 2002, we had the AIR Awards. I don't know if you remember those. They're like the Emmys for radio. Mm. And I got super drunk. Twice in my life, I've drank dark whiskey, and I got super drunk. Won a couple awards. That was fun. And the next day, the show was out at, not the MAC, but one of those places like that. And it was me and Tom doing sports competition against each other. And I was so dehydrated, and I was so hungover. And it comes to the part where we're shooting like penalty kicks in soccer. Well, because I played soccer and because I'm a show-off, I was just launching them. And I launched one, and something kind of tingled in my quad.
Yeah,
I should have known better. I launched the next one, and it snapped off.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
And it was, and I did not go to the doctor. And, like, the next day, it was as black, as dark as Ronji's hat. And ever since then, it's never quite, like, if I were, I don't sprint a lot these days, but if I were to go in an all-out sprint, after about 20 yards, it would start to kind of feel it, you know?
Yep.
That was dumb.
Mm. And it's important, too, like, the reason why I bug Amy about it the way I do, just, well, mostly I'm kidding, but it's because I know you want to keep running.
Yeah.
Right? If you're like me, like, I'm not trying to compete in anything. So if I'm doing something stupid, I know that the only thing I'm doing is continuing the pain, which is up to me. But if I want to go back, like if I wanted to play baseball again, I would have to take better care, say, not to hurt my shoulder.
Yeah.
Or not to, you know, if it hurts, to shut it down so that I wouldn't want, so I wouldn't have to stop throwing for a period of time or whatever. I mean, it's just.
Yeah. You know, it's tough versus smart. You know, I mean, I grew up in a very tough time. Mm-hmm. Be tough. No one ever said be smart. Not once.
Yeah.
Never. No one ever said, maybe you should do this. It was always just whatever the hardest thing was, don't be a wuss, go do that.
Oh, it's like we were talking about the Alberto Salazar, Dick Beardsley, Boston Marathon in the 80s when they thought it was weak to drink water.
Yeah.
It's called Duel in the Sun, and I think one of them messed themselves up for life, maybe both of them. But they didn't drink water because they thought it was weak.
Jeez. Yeah, that's what football coaches used to think too, right?
Yeah.
Two-a-days, no water. I know, like, so I know where I get this, not like enforced, but just by learning from being around it. Like, my dad is that way. So he would referee hockey, and one night he came home, and the entire side of his face was stitched. He got hit by a puck, and when it happened, you could see his teeth
on the outside. My gosh.
And so he got that. He went to work the next morning. And then he another year, it was another time, he got slammed into the boards because there's a big like, you know, crush of players, and he broke 3 ribs. He went to work the next day. Like, you're crazy, but that's what I grew up seeing.
Yeah.
So when things happened to me, I thought, well, that's just what you do.
Yeah.
Dave, you'll appreciate this. So I had to go to a gym, which I don't do. I feel out of place in a gym. Like, I just run. And, you know, when you're a marathoner, everyone you run with, they're like skeletons, healthy skeletons. I run with, my entire team is all guys, and I'm bigger than all of them. They're all just like little twigs. Anyway, so I go to the gym, and I'm on the bike. And first of all, people in gyms actually like have shape and muscles and everything. And I'm laughing because we talked about bottoms earlier.
Yes.
And how that word is funny. And this girl walks by. She's amazing. She's like a goddess. Like,
Amy's been talking about this girl's ass for 5 hours. 5 hours.
Because as a marathoner, I don't see bottoms. As a marathoner,
not used
you just
to it.
Don't
Amy's like,
see them.
I always thought butts were flat.
I thought they were flat. I thought they were supposed to be flat. I didn't know they bumped out like that.
Dude.
There's something wrong with her.
I wanted to ask her,
Show me your ways.
Yeah.
Can you
teach
tell me your bottom exercises?
Teach me.
He means the intro for Baby Got Back. Oh my God, dude, would you look at her butt?
I was so amazed, and I'm like, I have been in the wrong crowd. Yeah. I have picked up the wrong sport. I am in the wrong crowd. Can you tell me your bottom exercises?
If you don't ask her, Mason Jar's going to. So you better go find her.
Well, he's
probably seen butts.
Yeah, they were a couple, and they were a very attractive couple. But even as a girl talking to another girl, I'm so conscious, like at a gym, that it's creepy. And so I didn't want to say anything, but I would have said, like, can you just show me what exercises to do? Because I don't know. I honestly don't know other than squats. So I'm like, I guess I'll do squats, which I did. Motivated, because I just thought, well, I am in the wrong crowd. These people are amazing.
Cheeseburgers and squats, that'll do it.
Yeah, say to grow mass of anything, one key would be to not burn a billion calories a day running.
Yeah. But I tell you what, Dave, I was like, wow, I was just rocked my world.
I wish you could have seen me at my peak. You could set a cup of coffee on the back of my butt.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It got in the way.
Still pretty good.
Thank you. Stranger in this town. 124 DGS. Under the heading that this is not a real show. Does anyone notice that you never see white dog poop anymore?
White dog poop?
Yeah. Do you even know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's ashy?
Yeah. When it's
like
old.
It's old. It's super old. Yeah.
And it just struck me that, it's because we pick it up now.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Which means that we never did when I was a kid.
Right.
It's because now it's become such a social stigma to let your dog like poop in somebody's yard and just leave it or whatever.
And it should be.
Yes,
as it should be.
Yep.
But I think that's like a societal issue that we have actually defeated.
Yeah, we solved it.
We conquered it. Yep. We shamed
as
people
a kid,
so bad.
Like I've said before in South Alexandria, no fences, dogs ran free, so dogs are pooping in everyone's yard. And a couple times a summer you'd step in it and you'd go hose it off, you know. But there's tons of white dog poop around, which was the best thing my therapist ever said. It's like, quit kicking the dog turd. He's like, it's old, it's over, it's white, it's dry. You kick it, it's brown in the middle. And I was kicking the dog turd in my life. I thought that was really good. He's from Texas. But yeah, I guess like as kids, we're just like, okay, just let it go. It's fine. You're gonna step in it, but it's fine.
I think some of it too is like food's better. Dog food. Like if you go back 40, 50 years, dog food was trash. Like, you think we eat junk food,
it was
bad. It was all, like, you know, the stuff that people don't usually buy much anymore. Like, the quality of dog food has risen quite a bit.
So your dog just eats it.
Well, one of them tries to, yeah. Yeah, she does.
No,
I don't
on.
Let her, but she tries to, yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's because I'm an adult now or there's less dog poop, but I don't step in dog poop anymore.
No, that's true. It's more regular for me because I have dogs and I'm in my backyard either cleaning it up or just walking around. But it's not like in when we were kids, you'd just be like running down the street, whoop, because you'd hit it.
Dude,
it ends up all up your back and you're like, dang it.
The last time it happened, probably, probably like 15. Have I told you this?
Yes, awful.
Well, it's not my fault. It is my fault. So my buddy and I were looking for apartments, and so we went to one of those realtor places where they take you around and they show you in their own cars. And we went to like 5 places, and it was the last one, and then he was going to drop us off at home. And we get back into his car, this realtor's car, and I'm smelling it. And I was like, I'm looking down, like, is that me? And I realized it was. I had stepped in it, gotten to the car, and I tracked it into his car. And I said, hey, man, I've done this. We pulled over at Walgreens. My buddy and I cleaned it out. And then we're like, all right, we're not taking any of those places, by the way.
Oh, man.
So all that guy did was drive us around for 3 hours. We took none of those places. And I brought him dog poop in his car.
Yikes.
That's pretty cold.
My buddy Matt had the best April Fool's of all time. He had his 3 kids. And when they were younger, he put peanut butter on his boot.
Sitting
at dinner, and he's like, does anyone smell dog poop?
Hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he just took his finger and put it in his mouth.
I'm glad you said boot.
Yeah.
DGS still coming down out there, at least downtown a little bit, tapered off some. Maybe it'll get a little bit of milting this weekend. I think it's supposed to get up to right around 40 on Sunday. It'd be nice if just like the sidewalks, you know, that would be a tremendous help.
Yeah, I think it's 40, 38 tomorrow, 42 Sunday. So yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. That'll work. You know what I was thinking about last night? I'm very fortunate in many ways, but I'm very fortunate specifically in that I typically don't have bad days at work. I work through bad days. Like I'll have something in my personal life that's, you know, causing me stress or anxiety and that makes working harder. And in all candor, because I'm human, on any given day at 12:55, I'm thinking, boy, I wish I could just go home right now. But in general, it's like, because I used to have really bad days at work when I was a lawyer, just, you know, stomach aches driving in, like, this is going to suck. It's going to be terrible. I don't do that. Like, we're really lucky that we basically get paid to have fun with our buddies.
Yep.
Pretty crazy.
It is nice. I mean, there are, like you said, there are times where you wish you didn't have to go in. But I think if you have, no matter what your job is and no matter how much you love it, how good it is, how well it pays you, there are going to be times you don't feel like being at work.
Yeah.
I think it's like,
it's everybody.
The job, like you said, Ron, you'll say it's not a real job. That's fun. The job description. If I didn't have this job, I wouldn't follow the news. I will say that. I've never consumed so much news.
How detached would you want to be?
Right now, all of it. All the way all detached. The way.
It's like, I want to be on the International Space Station.
Yeah, I would be all the way detached. I would be, yeah, I would. And partly, because that's something I've noticed with, because even if, it's like when you do a research paper, right? You do your arms spread apart, like that wide, this big, this must research for just a little bit in a paper. And you want to be prepared for whatever you're going to talk about. So you may research a topic that you never talk about. But, you know, I want to have receipts. I want to know if I'm going to contribute at all. I want it to be worthwhile. So I consume a lot of news. And I've noticed, like, it's taken a physical toll. And it's made me pretty cynical. And I've never been a cynical person. Like, I've always been compared to, and I've never seen the movie Over the Hedge, but I guess there's a really optimistic, excited squirrel. He's like, hey, everything's going to be great. This is so fun. And that's, like, where I've always been. And I will say the news cycle, and not just politics. I mean, politics, yes, makes you cynical, but there's just a lot of suffering in the world and a lot of sadness. I'm, you know, watching the fires, reading into the responses. You've got the politics of it. You've got the tragedy of it. I think I have told people, don't watch the news. Don't listen to it.
I've said many times when people ask, so you have such a cool job. What's the worst part? Without hesitation, the worst part is knowing everything.
Yeah.
That's the worst part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when I go on vacation, go to Colorado hiking and stuff, I don't avoid the news, but I don't have my notebook out and making, here's my take and let's, it feels amazing.
Oh, that's like, even Ronj will often text me because I will text the show while I'm on vacation and he'll say, go be on vacation, turn off, you know, everything, stop watching the news. And I did that when I was in Switzerland. And I felt like the 800-pound gorilla on your back was just gone. I felt light. I felt happy. I didn't have as many stomach aches. I slept better. Like, for real. And I know I've always internalized it.
This is a related topic, building off what I heard you guys talking about when I was driving in with my friend Rach, who I picked up today in my new Jeep.
Oh,
Hotel on Wheels.
The Hotel on Wheels, as
Windows?
I'm calling it. The Ritz. I have a coffee
Sorry,
maker
the,
in
you
there.
Know, it should be the penthouse on wheels.
Yeah, it should be. It is. But I was listening to you guys talk about the behaviors of the ex-presidents, and are they just playing us, and do they pretend to hate each other more than they really hate each other, and are we picking up the tab for that, and we hate each other because of that? And on the drive in, Rach and I were talking about how much stuff there is on TikTok about the fires in LA. F these people and these rich a-holes, and who cares? And now you know what it feels like to be normal. And it just feels like, God, like, seriously, why? Come on. You know, I get your point, but these are human beings.
And they're not all those people.
No.
Like, that's like 1% of the people affected.
Even if they are. Like, Skip is a very well-to-do guy. When his house burned down, I watched him go through that.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It's still horrible. And I kind of want to have that discussion here. Like, what do you think it is? How are we the frogs in the boiling pot? Did it just happen so slowly over time? Like, how do we get, because I don't we talk about this every single day at the DGS. I don't remember this from when I was even Amy's age.
Yeah, it's been decades of othering people. You're told that they're the enemy. They're not told. It's not. You're not. It's not framed as they disagree with you. They see things different. No, they're your enemy. Hollywood is your enemy. Or if you're on the other side of it, you know, whatever. Religious people are your enemy. None of us are enemies. But that's how it gets framed by people who largely make money off of our anger. That's pretty much what it is. Whether it's TV, radio, print, internet, influencers, whatever. The people who make money off the fact that we now hate each other are the reason why we act like that and hate each other more than we should.
And even if it's not making money, it's just like the way we talked about social media allowed weird, you know, prejudiced people, racist people to find each other, right? Usually there's a social stigma to being prejudiced or racist, but if you're online, you can find a group and you find a community. And so it also made fringe people feel mainstream because you could have some rando tweet to a senator and the senator responds and that somehow gives the rando some element of credibility in our minds. And I think social media, in that same vein, it really rewards the worst tendencies of human nature, whether it's jealousy or anger or a hot take or an unreasonable take, and it goes viral. It gets views. It gets views ironically. It gets views seriously. And we've built a social media system that really rewards gross and base instincts of human nature.
Yeah, but it started 20 years before social media.
Yeah.
This started in the 90s. With this move to undermine higher education or to just turn it into any, it's no longer just a political disagreement. They are your enemy. Your opponent is your enemy. That started in the 90s.
This is the thing, and I don't believe most people live in this space where they're celebrating celebrities losing houses or rich people losing houses. I think there are some, but I really don't think it's even close to over 50%. I think the vast majority of people feel bad for everybody out there.
Yeah.
Though you might feel worse for somebody who doesn't have means to rebuild, which I do, because there are people who are going to lose everything and they won't know how they're going to get any of it back, right? Mm. But I think the thing that has been troubling the most to me, and I knew it was going to happen, but immediately wanting to blame DEI programs or Democrats or whatever for this fire, which I was listening to, I'm not a huge Joe Rogan fan, but he was, and I don't know how long ago it was, but he was talking to a fire about an LA firefighter.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy said to him, "We have just been lucky to this point that if all the conditions combine, dry weather, a fire starts, and there's that wind, we will not be able to do anything to combat it. But now it's like, oh, the Democrats have screwed it up." Or these DEI fire chief hires. No. This is a thing where the climate is helping create the atmosphere and the environment for this to happen. It's happening. It's nearly impossible to combat, especially if you don't have planes in the sky, which they couldn't for a couple of days. Like, why can't we just say, all right, let's battle this thing? And when it's over, let's go back and look and see if there were some things we could have done better. But I honestly don't believe the people who on day one jumped to criticize the fire department or the city of Los Angeles or the county or whatever. They don't really care about those people. They just want
to score political points.
Opportunity. And they knew it. And they knew it's going to play. And some of that narrative is going to take hold. And I think it's gross. I think it's the worst thing, other than people dying and losing homes, it's the third worst thing to happen.
And that's why I think bad messengers and that type of attitude, right. I mean, it is, you know, owning the liberals or whatever, owning the libs and using this to exploit political differences. I think the attitude, the manner in which that done discredits the conversation when there is a valid conversation to have about leadership, what could be done and what couldn't be done. My goodness, like I said, Joe Scarborough, of all people on MSNBC, was really laying into the mayor of L.A., Karen Bass, and laying into Gavin Newsom, saying, we have had city officials and residents say, hey, you're not clearing the brush in the forests. You're not doing this. You've had people within the water district saying, I know the reservoirs we have are full, but you've destroyed some reservoirs, and those reservoirs were built for a population half of what we have now. We really need some more reservoirs. And of course, they had the, you know, the that fish and the native land. That was controversial. But what you do have then in those leaders, within the mayor, with Gavin Newsom, some of their passions are DEI, right? They are passionate about it. They've talked about it. So what happens is, if their louder messages or loudest messages tend to be about diversity or DEI, or like, look what I gave to the libraries, when some of the citizens for years have been saying, this water issue is a big deal. We are one of the wealthiest areas in the country. We should be investing in desalination projects like they have in Israel, right? Another desert. We should be not destroying reservoirs. We should be building them up in case of an emergency, or building up the fire department. Those are all valid conversations. Those are political policy differences. And again, if they had talked not about DEI, maybe their passion had been cupcakes, people would have said, oh, they were so obsessed with cupcakes, we've been telling them for years. And I think that's a very, very valid argument. It's just a lot of times it is delivered from hyper-politicized people in a hyper-politicized way.
I don't believe that even if they were quiet about DEI, that it would not have been exploited, because they'll find it. The opponents will find it. They'll find this one little thing.
But if there's validity to it, they should fix it to save neighborhoods. This is all
they care. They're not lacking firefighters because of DEI. They're not turning away white people from jobs being firefighters. They're just saying, look, we want to open the opportunities to all kinds of people.
Yeah, and, but and I it's, mean, it's, I think it's a message. That's insane.
But it's also
80% of our new hires are not white.
It's disingenuous, though, because it's not being honest with what's really happening. These fires are not worse because of DEI. And if you want to have an honest, real conversation about why it's gotten out of control, let's have a real, honest conversation. But to jump straight to diversity and equity and inclusion is ridiculous, but they know it works.
I mean, like, I'm not a fan of Laura Ingraham. Like I said, so I was watching it with a teenager who's like, wow, why is she so
She's hateful
mad?
All the time.
Yeah. And because she's hateful, she turns you off from her message, even though I'm
But why
say,
is she hateful?
Well, no,
because it works.
But
because she makes money from it. I mean, that's the point. And, you know, that's why when we talked about this yesterday with the presidents, they don't hate each other as much as the people who try to fire us up to
but
fight each other.
Someone who's actually concerned about policy and does think Karen Bass is not a good mayor and does think Gavin Newsom has misguided priorities, I feel like it's hard for me to have this conversation, because the loudest voices. And again, I think Laura Ingraham made a couple of, and I do not like her, and I don't like her attitude. She made a couple of points, and I thought, wow, I actually agree with that point, but it's turning me off because of her attitude. So then when I try to have the conversation and say, okay, well, at least Joe Scarborough is saying, man, this has been a disaster. It's the same. It's local government matters and priorities matter. And it's why in the city, the very people who voted in to Shara Jones or Megan Green are saying, man, I don't feel safe, but maybe, you know, they're talking for a while. They're talking a lot about the $500 checks or reparations. And if you're someone who just wants your trash picked up, you're going to be angry at whatever their louder talking point is.
Yeah, I get it.
I find it fascinating in these kinds of things. Like, we talk a lot about what's happening here because we work downtown. We live in this region, all of this stuff. But there are people spouting off about policies in L.A. who've never followed it before this fire. They have never once followed any of those things until this fire. And I think that it's important, you know, I think that one of the nearest things I can compare the reaction to is probably the reaction after Katrina, because it was not great. It wasn't handled as well as it should have been. It was poorly handled. There were problems. There were big mistakes, right? You know, the whole, you're doing a good job, Brownie.
Yeah.
It looked bad for a reason, because they weren't doing a good job. But it wasn't immediately just turned into, oh, see, this is what you get with a Republican.
It was, let's get through it first, and then we'll do the postmortem.
So, yes. You do that. You have to go over what mistakes were made, but let's take care of people first and then go back to it.
I don't know.
152 DGS. Coming up at 2:30, we're going to have Andrew's brother Eric on. He lives right next to this neighborhood where all the fires are happening and was evacuated. And he's going to kind of tell us, you know, on the ground and not being a super rich Hollywood star, like what it's like being out there and what the vibe is and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's a great example of what we were just talking about.
Yeah, his brothers are
right. It's not all just, you know, Hollywood actors and millionaires. I mean, a lot of normies live out there. A lot of people, it's 95% not celebrities and not rich people.
And the history, like even like Sunset Boulevard, those homes were built in the 1920s, like little homes that were there for generations. And the history of like a Cary Grant or something like that.
Okay, how does it hit you with like State Farm, that they, you know, took these payments from people for 30, 40, 50 years and then canceled them when things, you know, turned the way they turned? Is that just business? Hey, we're not in the business of losing money and there's a lot of fires out there. Or is there some sort of a higher duty, do you believe?
I mean, as long as it's done in advance of whatever the natural disasters, because there are a lot of problems with various insurance policies in Florida related to hurricanes. And, you know, so it's one thing if you're told well in advance of a disaster, hey, by the way, you're not covered for this anymore, or we're tripling the cost of it or whatever, or versus like if it were to happen now and you're like, yeah, guess what? By the way, we're not honoring that. Those are different things. I don't think they have a duty to offer anything, right?
I think they have a duty to people who've been with them. And I don't know what the cutoff should be, but if you have had the same insurance company for 20 years, they've stuck with you. You stick with them.
I wonder if the structure will have to change. There's the FAIR insurance program, which is like a small state insurance program in California that cannot cover the damages. But some people have that when they weren't being covered by private insurance anymore. I wonder if just that structure is going to have to change as these natural disasters keep happening and the damage is, you know, $60 billion. Like, no company can insure that. It's going to, we might just have to figure out a way to restructure something. I'm not sure.
Or the government will have to pay for it.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, or
federal level even. It might just be the only way to do it. And I know people hate that idea, but what else are you going to do? You have all these hundreds or thousands of people who have lost homes.
So what about people who are just ass out? They're not super mega rich, but they had a $2 million home. It burned to the ground. It wasn't covered by insurance. Is it being good humans that we want the federal government to jump in, or is it just our inability to watch someone suffer? And like, because a lot of people just say like, hey, sucks to be you.
I can't live there. I can't do this. Well, hey, it's too bad for you. Maybe you don't get a $2 million house replaced. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. But we should all sort of be on the side of help these people if they need help. They can't rebuild on their own. I don't know what else you would do or why you would say, screw it. Sorry, man. Should have lived in a better spot. Shouldn't have picked there.
I mean, you can literally say that about every part of the country.
Yeah.
Well, and also,
you know, you can get hit by storms in the south and the southeast. You get tornadoes in the Midwest. I mean, you know, I think in the end, we should be, as humans, about trying not to leave people, as you put it, Dave, ass out. Yeah. I think it's good to try to help people. And maybe not, like you said, maybe not replacing your $2 million home, but
exactly
at least getting
that,
you somewhere.
And Malibu wasn't supposed to be high risk for forest fires. You know what I mean?
It wasn't supposed to be.
Supposed to be. So even if they had put the high risk caveats, I mean, you can't just say an entire state, you know, is high risk. Like, Sunset Boulevard wasn't supposed to be high risk for forest fires, because you know those areas that are, but it wasn't supposed to be that.
All right, you guys get out of here. Have a good weekend.
See you. Enjoy the snow.